Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. Visit morantechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. On this podcast, we feature a keynote address from the 2011 NERCOMP conference. Our presenter is Lois Brooks, Vice Provost for Information Services at Oregon State University. Her presentation is entitled, Meeting the Challenge, the 21st Century IT Organization.
Good morning. It is such a pleasure to be back at NERCOMP and to renew acquaintances and see so many friends. I'm going to talk very practically about where the IT organization is going, but let me start by setting up the state of play that we're in right now. Universities are an incredibly complex ecosystem of social activity, community life, learning, entrepreneurship, field and local research, teaching. Very complex structure in which we work. And when we look at where we got to now, why we think about where IT is going and how that might be different, a couple things I want to call out that have driven this. In this complex environment, there's been a tremendous benefit from market forces, innovation in technology, in content, in infrastructure that is really we've been able to exploit for the betterment of the university. Conversely, as you all know, it's been a really challenging economic environment that's affected us in higher ed. Coupled with the budget pressures we're all facing, we're also looking at the unfunded mandates that come from an increased security profile and increased regulation and compliance issues that are coming with us. So some real tension there. Within the university, similarly, we've got the same sets of tensions. Most of us have taken budget cuts in the last few years, but as we've taken these budget cuts, we're not holding back at the university. In fact, I would say that these are driving us to be even more competitive as we look at the role of higher education in a broader landscape. The imagination of our faculty and students remains vibrant and robust. And our universities are launching new initiatives, they're looking globally for better programs, and they're increasingly moving from what I would say is potentially a glacial pace of making decisions and moving programs into crispness and purposefulness in how we move things forward. It's starting to feel like a different environment. And so the new normal in which we're working, our programs are interdisciplinary, either through faculty hiring, changing courses, sometimes through university reorganizations. We're looking at technology transfer. We're looking at global context for our students to become citizens and for partnerships. A very deep focus now in most universities and colleges on learning outcomes. Are we doing our job for the students? And are we preparing students to go out in the workforce? It's a much different environment than it was 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. So to get to the place we are now, what did we do? We bought networks for our campuses and deployed them. We bought desktop computers, computers for the classrooms. We built enterprise systems, and then we built learning systems. As we got through these layers of spending, we turned around and started having to spend a lot of money on security. And what it looks like is this accelerated curve of spending that we've done in IT over time. We continue to grow the spending in IT faster than the U.S. economy and faster than the rate of growth of funding at our university. That's unsustainable. And so what happened by the time we got to the end of the last decade, there was kind of a real decision, a reckoning at many universities. Do we continue to invest in transformational technology, or do we really, what I would say, dumb down the IT organization? Do we push it down and make it plumbing? And I think that's the wrong construct. And where we are now, of course IT should work, and some of it looks just like plumbing. The networks have to stay up. And of course technology is transformational. We can't step away and say we're not going to have transformational IT as it relates to research and teaching. That's not the world we live in. And we've built up this big structure of IT around us. And so what we have now is this house we built that we have to maintain and throw money into to keep moving forward. And that's the state of play right now. And so I want to then switch over and start thinking about where we're going. And rather than say, do we spend more money, do we spend less money, is it transformational, is it plumbing, I think the construct should be completely different. That we need to think about what does the university need, and that's what we'll spend the rest of the time thinking about together. How can we leverage the investments we've got in place to really move us forward? And how can we create capacity? How can we create innovation at the university that doesn't always require a big spend of money? Lev Gonick, the highly quotable Lev Gonick, CIO at Case Western, in his annual prediction of technology, wrote a couple months ago, in the next year, we'll see a critical mass of universities leveraging technology in new and innovative ways. And he talks about teaching, learning, the student experience, the business realities on our campus, but leveraging technology in new and innovative ways. Okay, let's take a look at some trends where I think we're going. All data will be mashed up. I'll talk about accreditation at Oregon State a little bit more later, but we've been going through accreditation, which is this massive data collection exercise, and so I've been thinking about data a lot. And what I've come to with this is that in the future, you know, we've talked a lot about the mashup in the academic context, particularly in the context of rich media, where people do critique a new literature through a mashup. But I think we're doing the same thing with administrative data. If we look at all the data we collect, whether it's a grade or financial data or academic spending or whatever it might be, all of this data we can pick up and reuse in new ways that allow us to really leverage intelligence, really think about ourselves differently. And I'll go through some examples of this over the rest of the presentation. And the outcome of this is that we start to see data is no longer bound to its host system, to its originating system, and that data management becomes our job in the IT organization, and the host technology choices become ephemeral over time. Okay, let me give you, this is a hypothetical example. If we look at a transcript for a student, the transcript has basically what courses did you take and what grades have you got in your progression toward degree. But if you look at what a student does, the intellectual life that they build on our campus, it's the jobs that they have with us, it is service learning, it is potentially participation and leadership in clubs and athletics that help them develop as team members, as humans, it's their research or publications. It's a very rich intellectual life that they build. And all of this data now is stored in different places and different systems, some formal university systems, some less formal. What if we could take everything we know about a student and bring it together to really understand the intellectual life and progression of the students who attend our institutions? I was talking to one of the students at work about this, and I said, what would you do if you know, I could give you access to all your data? And I always jump right to the practical, so I said, what would you do? Would you build your resume? Would you do a grad school portfolio? And he said, I would do whatever I want to do. Just give me the data with it. And it was interesting because I think the answer for the institution is exactly the same one. What would you do with data if you could look at your student and their learning outcome, not only based on what classes they took, but how the work they did for you impacted that, how their club participation impacted that? What would you do to your programs, not only your academic, your core academic programs, but your service and your advising and the care for the students over time, if you could really look at the impact of these programs as a package, what would you tune up? And I call it a living transcript because what would you do, take it one step farther, if you could do it over time, if we didn't stop our snapshot of students when they left the university, if you could look at their continuing education, their career trajectories, and say the fact that, not that they took biology got them into med school, but the fact that they took biology and they were leading their soccer team so they had organizational skills and they had a programming job or a service job with us so that they had those kinds of skills, what did that do for their career trajectory? And if you knew that, how would you change and improve your programs over time? That's what leveraging data really starts to be about. Second trend, disaggregation. I was in a really terrific panel discussion yesterday with presidents and provost, and the provost at Tufts was talking about the fact that they wanted to make an academic program change that mattered to the university, but they were constrained by the fact that their student information system didn't have that capability. And what he said, that I scribbled down really quickly, the promise of IT was to make us be more creative, but it's boxing us in. He couldn't change his university because his system wouldn't do it. Disaggregation is decoupling components and building a customized system or structure of disaggregated components or disaggregated data. Let me give you, again, a couple examples to help illustrate what I'm thinking. Modern class. We build all the stuff we do on campus, classrooms and advising systems and teachers and TAs and so on. And we have not only our campus learning systems, which I represent with Sakai, but also the systems that our faculty and students bring together either formally or informally to conduct their classes, to conduct their discourse with each other, to move their media about, and so on. And we also have disaggregated components, content coming from places, mobile learning devices, just a few represented here. What we're looking at, I would argue at this point, we are in a completely modular learning environment at the campus. The question I have for the university is, how does the university grapple with this, and what do they do about it? Do they support it, or do they say, no, we're going to shove learning into a pipe, and these other things are not part of what the university supports? And I'll come back to this, but I want to just for the moment make the point that the disaggregation, the ability to pull components, creates a very rich, a very customized learning environment so that the way we teach biology doesn't need to look like the way we teach English. Second example. Allegheny College and Yale. These are both Sakai schools. And what they've each done is a mix of how they present their portfolio of applications to the campus. Allegheny runs Sakai on an off-site service hosted by LongSite. Yale runs Sakai, and they got a little vendor help from Unicon. Both of them are running Kaltura in the cloud. And Yale is also running UPortal locally and Illuminate in the cloud. And so what does this look like? Each of them have created a customized learning environment, a university-driven customized modular learning environment that looks seamless to the faculty and students. And instead of trying to buy a bigger system and shove all functions into it, they've kind of mixed and matched to get the componentry they need. Trend number three, leverage. So Lev Gonick wrote about leverage. And as I was thinking about his points, I started thinking about things like finally making good on the promise to use our huge network investment to bring down the cost of the telephones on campus. Started thinking about, do we actually turn on all the features in these massively expensive systems that we took years to deploy, so that we can really take advantage of the business processes? Do we really make good on our SharePoint investments, our Confluence investments, to really improve just how we do our daily work? But remember what Lev Gonick said is we'll start to use technology in interesting and innovative ways, and I would call those leverage points I just mentioned terribly important, but not particularly innovative. What does innovative start to look like? I told you I'd talk about accreditation. This is a super simplified example of accreditation, but if you look around the horizon of yellow boxes, some of the data that came in for one of our accreditation exercises, funding and expense data coming from the financial systems, student reflection and products of their work coming from students, of course, course content coming from the course catalog, and also deep data about the course, the outcomes coming from the schools and faculty, research data, faculty bio and productivity, not just for our university, but the faculty ahead of time, enrollment data, and then an interesting piece for one of our accreditation exercises, survey data about what the students did after they left. What industry did they go into? What was their salary trajectory? And so what we did is we did what I would call an accreditation mashup. We took all this data and brought it together. And in our case, the outcome of this is a rather hefty tome of spiral-bound paper. And as I was doing, it was a lot of work, but as I was looking at this, I started thinking about this question again. Why would we care? What would we do if I could bring all of this data together and really answer some interesting questions? Again, did a faculty hiring and their ability to generate research dollars, how did that relate to better education, or did it? Are they separate? Are they together? Funding and expense, is there bang for the buck as it relates to our goals for learning, retention, improving student education, for example? Are some of the questions we could answer if we started really mashing this data up and leveraging it. But let's take it a step farther. This is an entity diagram. It came from our College of Business at Oregon State University, and it's their accreditation environment. And I'll show you just a couple points on it in a moment. But what they did, they run Salesforce.com, and again, I'll come back to this later because there's some interesting points to think about in their work. They run Salesforce, and they use it For accreditations, we've got courses, evaluations, learning data that they keep in it. But they're also using the same thing. They do all their MBA admissions through the same system. They do. They track all the internships because business school students do a lot of internships, track all of that. They track all their fundraising and development through the same system. We've got leverage. We've got one system that's doing all of these different kinds of activities. And it's not just understanding that a B school alum is a great potential donor later on, not that they're not, but really looking at the relationship between all of these activities. And interestingly enough, beginning then to look at accreditation and that mashup of data, not just in its context, but a much larger context to understand the outcomes of their college. What else might we leverage? Think about all the investments we've done in teaching, in the media infrastructure we've all built, in collaboration tools, in fitting out our classrooms multiple times over the decades, in gathering content. What could we do with that? Could we use this data, this infrastructure, redeploy it, exploit it, leverage it to attract more students to really achieve these goals of globalization, of connecting ourselves to the global community, giving our students global opportunities without leaving our physical campus? How would we understand our role to educate our society, to bring the knowledge we've gained out as we solve these intractable problems on our campuses, with our research, with our investigation? How can we share that with society, re-leveraging the investment we've already made in our media technology and gathering data? Interesting questions to ponder. Okay. So, what are the implications here? If we then say we've got data around the campus that people are reusing, we've got systems around the campus that people are reusing, we've got students and faculty running around doing who knows what in their classes, what we're really talking about is a different construct. We're saying that the IT department no longer owns the technology of the campus. We have lost control, which is okay, actually. But we're no longer managing that environment well-bounded. What we're doing then is shifting the role of the IT organization to one where we develop strategy for the university. We think about this context, we think about all the implications, and come back and take a seat at the table and say, let me help you solve your problems with some technology strategy. Let me help you manage this complex environment and bring it together for you. And in the middle of it, how do we then, with our own behavior as IT professionals, model what effectiveness really means? So as we begin then to get our house in order, what we start to do, and this is the role of the new IT organization, we start to become highly effective planners and executors. We undertake strategy and really think through, and I'll talk a little bit more about cloud, and I've talked some already. You cannot think about these strategies with what's on-site and what's off-site without really thinking through and educating your university about the legal, the technical, the organizational implications of those decisions. We're not just brokering those services. We're not just bringing the systems up. We're really helping think through the complexity and the risk and the reward by doing each of these, clearly rethinking our architecture and our hardware, software, and identity strategy for the university in this context. We also begin to think economically. Where can we really drive into a commodity layer? Where are we really investing in differences instead of the continued one-off innovative solutions that we've done? We really start to think and design our IT operations in a much different way. And I want to pause on this last point about effectiveness for the organization. When we graduate students from our institutions, employers expect them to come out versed in technology, effective and efficient in their use of technology, able to work as part of a team. They expect them to come out well prepared for the workforce. And what I would ask of ourselves is, are we that effective in our own practice at the university, certainly, and even within the IT organization, in fluid, flexible use of technology, in flexible use of collaboration and learning tools that help us, that we expect of our students, that help us do our job better. And finally, the last points of civility. We really value face-to-face interaction, and I think one of the values of a campus education, virtual or physical, is truly that interaction, as witnessed by us being here today. And what we talk about with improving business processes is deeper intervention of technology in our work. Not just the flame war, but I think there's a higher level of civility and citizenship that we can demonstrate in our use of technology. Are we articulate and effective in those mediums as well as a face-to-face presentation? So, gave the big picture, laid down the charge for the IT organization to become strategic and for us to become highly effective exemplars of how we use technology. Let's get a little more practical. Let's talk about some of the strategies and some of the economic tools we use to do this. Interoperability is a technical discussion. It's an architectural discussion and not one that I want to go into here. But what I will say is that the relentless pursuit of interoperability underpins everything I'm talking about. As I do some more examples, as I talk about where we're going, have that in your mind that our job is to make sure that interoperability happens. Shared services. It is time, and we are beginning to do it in higher ed, that we look above our own campuses at what we call the service layer above the campus to start to consolidate costs, to manage progress amongst all of us. HathiTrust is a terrific example of this. Any university that has scholarly artifacts, scholarly output, and any university with a library must deal with digital preservation. It's hugely expensive, and the way we do it looks pretty much the same amongst all of us. It's an area ripe for working together. And so what HathiTrust has done, I'm going to oversimplify it, but they've gathered together a lot of universities, Internet Archive, Google, some other players, and everybody pays their fair share into it. I mean, it costs money to run something like this, but it costs a lot less when you don't have redundancy campus to campus. So everybody pays in, and then they ship their content to Michigan. Michigan does digital transformations for preservation and archiving and mirrors it at Indiana. So what we're looking at is a shared service amongst many universities hosted by two universities, consolidated expertise, consolidated cost. And I will say in this case, a really nice benefit of by going to other universities rather than to commercial entities, a much easier legal construct in which to work. You think about where does your data go and what are you going to do with it and who can have access to it. It's a lot easier to talk to your lawyer about your data being at University of Michigan than it is to talk to them about it being at name your commercial service provider. So really interesting layer, and also a solid reminder of two things. One is that collaboration can work amongst higher education and that the cloud isn't always commercial. The cloud is sometimes us. Second example, my own new university, Oregon State University. We actually run at Oregon State, we have a banner instance that we run for four other universities as well as the chancellor's office, along with telecom and networking services for those. We are a cloud provider to the other universities. So the obvious benefit of not everybody, every university having having lower cost, I'm able to have one pool of employees on my campus. In Oregon, which is a rural state, it also is a big help for us because hiring can be difficult, particularly at the remote campuses. But again, the added benefit of looking together across universities in one system, as we start to think about data exchange amongst the systems and doing performance and just basic reporting that we have to do for the state system, all the data looks alike and it's all in one place. It makes reporting much easier. It makes analysis much easier. So a very simple example, and we're certainly not the only ones, but the cloud does become a shared service component, or shared services are in the cloud for us. Okay, back to our class. Talking about a portfolio approach. So I mentioned before, we've got all of these components that are coming together to make the class, and the challenge is on for the university to grapple with this and deal with it. This is an absolutely rich and customized learning experience, the one we want to deliver. And we've got some things we've got to think about and some problems with a portfolio approach. Clearly, with data and student interactions everywhere, we need to get security in order, and data interoperability, of course. On the software side, with our on-campus, off-campus systems, we need to clean up and manage identity so we know whose stuff is what and where it is. Again, data interoperability, and a question of persistence. If our students do rich and meaningful work in Google Apps, or their artifacts are on Flickr, or the course artifacts, the course discussion happens through a Facebook page. How do we capture that? How do we know for our own learning over time? There are real questions of university outcomes, university goals that we need to grapple with this, in this environment. What I would say, though, even as I talk about this, is at this point, we have to flip our strategy. We cannot any longer give a quality education by saying, and everybody has to use Blackboard or everybody has to use Sakai, and that's the boundary that I place on education. And then we buy bigger and bigger and bigger systems to accomplish what everybody needs to get that boundary wider. We have to flip our strategy over and say, I've got core functions, and I'm going to go out and buy the functions that are important, or adopt or build or whatever we do. Get those functions that are important to my campus and use them, and use them well. And not have wasted effort, wasted bandwidth for our staff, for our students with functions they don't need. It's really a different model of saying we go after the portfolio and we go after it purposefully with the questions of security, interoperability, and persistence in mind. Okay, back over to our friends at the business school. They're actually using this portfolio aggregated approach. I mentioned before that they're doing fundraising, they're doing MBA admissions, they're doing accreditation out of one system. They picked a platform that gives the integration to do this, and they can bring components in as they like. So they're actually building this system over time without having to do point upgrades and swap the whole thing out and train everybody. So rather than having a major upgrade with a lot of training, what they do is they bring in a new component and just show people the new field on the screen or the new features, or when somebody doesn't like something, they can change that part of the system out. They've gone to a much more lightweight, iterative approach, and I'm pleased to say, because I'm looking at how do I support the campus widely, they've got two other colleges coming on board. We're starting to leverage this portfolio approach in these activities that are best done close to the college. So what have we got going here? We've got, actually, what I really find fascinating with this is we've got a portfolio of function, but a portfolio of data as well. So we've got course feeds coming in from both the registrar and from Blackboard at our campus. We're tied to the teaching evaluation system, different kind of data interoperability. We've got admissions information tied to the admission systems and Banner. At Oregon State, our fundraising organization is a separate legal entity called the Foundation, and they've got their own systems, of course, and we've got feeds going externally to our foundation. So what we start to see with the next generation of the portfolio approach is a portfolio of systems, a portfolio of functions, a portfolio of data coming together that really meets the needs of this organization without this massive churn of technology behind it. It's a really interesting approach. Okay, so let's flip over to the economic side. Mentioned market forces early on. Market forces are our friends. They bring us new technology. Moore's Law has worked for us. Capacity's gone up and prices relatively have gone down from where we were with every passing year. The trick for us, of course, in the IT organization is separating the wheat from the chaff, choosing which ones to go after. But the market and looking at the market and going after it is a huge driver. I should say with these, there are other strategies, other economies that you can go after. These are the ones that I think are incredibly powerful in the context of what the university wants to accomplish right now. Open source. We're actually really good at open source in higher ed. Actually, businesses too. We've all been using Linux and Apache at the lower levels of the organization for years and make good use of those. And I would say we've actually been masterful across higher education at looking at new programs and innovations really to drive the innovation layer on our campus. And what's happened over time, of course, is that many of these have become core content. Oregon State, we have a Drupal infrastructure, started, you know, experimental like everyone's. We're now running the core campus website, 1,200 websites, and 1.5 million pages out of the same infrastructure. That's leverage, and that's a great use of open source. And the same with the course management systems, other tools. And then we look at projects like Sakai that have now said we're doing core infrastructure and we're going back out in the innovation space again. So we look at the communities of practice migrating. And of course, the core infrastructure, the Qualys and DuraSpace and so coming online now that we can exploit. So what we've got actually is a house with a lot of open source in it already at the university. Those of you who know me know that I am a fan of open source. I've done a lot of work in that community, and it was straight-on economics that got me into it. We're a development house at Stanford. We developed our own software, and software development is really expensive, and software maintenance is even more expensive and kind of thankless. And we started doing Sakai actually just to pool resources together, and one thing led to another, and now we've got 100 universities contributing code. But I'm not biased to open source. I buy a lot of software, and I think that pooling our money to buy software from a vendor is also a powerful form of changing the market and of doing scale economies. It makes sense. But that said, I'm really interested now, as I look at open source and what we're doing with it, for two reasons that tie directly back to this question of what does the university need, how are we going to leverage what we've got already, and how are we going to do more without continuing to throw money into repairing the house. The licensing cost is an issue, but there are two other things I want to call out. One is lowered risk. So as we all brought our enterprise systems and our hardware and all these things on board, what we've done is we've gotten on this treadmill of spending that we really can't control. And every time you buy a package, you deploy it, you make this investment in training, and that thing gets bought or you get a point upgrade that you don't need, you're forced into upgrading and spending the money on the licensing, on training, and the opportunity cost of your staff time to deal with that. What we've done as we make these decisions is run our universities based on the whims of vendors that may or may not be aligned with our goals. It's not all bad, and again, I continue to buy software, but as I think about how to best serve my university, I'm increasingly drawn to open source because I've got the flexibility of controlling when I do the upgrades, of moving from vendor to vendor. I lower the risk associated with the spending treadmill that we get ourselves on. The second point with this, some of the licenses we sign, unfathomably, we sign licenses that don't allow us to take data out of systems once we put them in. And you go back to all these points I made about leverage. How many ways would you use that data if you could take it out? And if we're prohibited from doing that, we've just hamstrung ourselves. And the second issue is, even if the license allows it, it can be brutally hard to get that data out and interoperate it and do something else with it. Incredibly expensive. What I like about open source is, for the most part, open source software is standard-based. I worked in an open source community, and we would have fierce intellectual discussions around the right way to do something. The answer was always, we're both right, let's write a standard API and make it work. And so what we end up with across the entire open source community is this notion of interoperability that allows us then to do this leverage that I've been talking about. And that's why I'm so interested in open source right now, less as a development house at Oregon State, but as an aggressive adopter as I build out my university's portfolio and structure their strategy, their technical architectural strategy for the future. Flipping to the second economic point. Commoditization where it matters. Where can we, this is just straight on technical stuff, where can we drive those costs down by virtualizing, by getting our systems on the same build environment, by making common choices around operating systems, by leveraging staff expertise? Where can we really restructure the way we run an IT organization and the choices we make and get those costs down? The closer we get to teaching and research, the more it matters that technology looks different. In my school of oceanography and genomics, look really different technically, and the new media center looks a lot different as well. It matters that I have a really customized, rich technical profile to present to them. The way I run the network really needs to look the same across campus. Drive those costs down. By looking at a commodity-based approach where we can, and really getting business-like about this, what do? We leverage staff expertise. The most expensive thing we can do is, of course, hire people. And if we can tune and really exploit the people if we can leverage their talents, terrible, wipe that from the webcast. If we can really start to leverage purchasing, leverage training of our staff, all of a sudden we've gotten lighter, flexible, we can move more quickly, we can be more responsive like the university wants. So, of course, what you're thinking is you just said let 1,000 flowers bloom, we need a portfolio approach, and now you're saying make everything look alike. These are actually really harmonious ideas, completely harmonious ideas. And the reason is this, that 1,000 flowers need to bloom in education and in research, but those 1,000 flowers can bloom over the same digital asset management system. They can all bloom over servers and storage that look pretty much like each other. We can really pick and choose. I mean, we're the strategists. We can pick and choose where we drive for a commodity layer, get those costs under control, where we can then return the money back into innovation. It's really looking at a broader strategy, not you have to do everything one way, but how do we do it across the levels of the university? I want to give you two completely different examples. Other schools are doing things that I think are pretty interesting that tie all this together in my mind. First one is UC Davis. I'll just point you, there's a URL at the bottom, or you can Google EDUCAUSE Davis, and you can get to the really terrific webcast that Davis staff just did that explained their strategy far better than I can because I don't work at Davis. But let me tell you what they talked about in general and what's really interesting. What they have is a strong open source strategy and a strong cloud and service-based strategy. And this is their slide. Let me just give you a quick orientation to it. We're looking at services above the campus, on the campus, below the campus. In the on-campus, right across the middle, what they've done is developed in their central IT group a shared virtualized service to run servers for the campus. They're running over 200 servers for other entities on campus, and by using virtualization, they've got collective costs down and of course, reduced the footprint in the data center, the energy and consumption costs. They're running they use Qali for research administration and financial administration. They're running that on the campus using open source software. What they call the above campus layer are services that are running not on their campus, either at a commercial cloud or private cloud at another university. They have a varied strategy. And what they've done is they've officially brokered these services for the university. In what they call the below the campus layer, these are consumer-based services that people use that they haven't officially brokered, but they've done integration to. So, what really fascinated me about Davis when I listened to their presentation, how they described themselves, they said they need to be superior designers, planners, builders, capacity planners. That's what the CIO, Peter Siegel, described his role. And he said, we're the designers, we're the strategists, and then we turn over running things to other people sometimes. Sometimes. The other issue that I really like about Davis and about the way they've gone about this is if you think about all the different ways you can mix and match a toolkit of local, on-campus, aggregate partnerships on campus, buying things, moving your data in, moving your data out, what they've done is they've looked across the board at all of these, and they've looked across the board at their university and what they need, and they've built this Lego block approach. They haven't said, we do things this way. What they've done is they said, I've got 20 tools in my toolkit, and I've got 20 other needs. Let me see if I can find the right fit, and let me see if I can make it all make sense. And as they went on to describe what they've done, they said, our core investment in IT right now is in middleware. Our core investment is in interoperability at this point. That's our expertise. It was a really interesting presentation. If this piques your interest, I'd have you go look at it. And I will say they were pretty frank about what worked and what didn't work when they did their presentation. It was real good on the ground stuff. Second example, completely different, that I want to show you is from Stanford. I understand Harvard's got a project like this, but as well. So credit to the Harvard people if they're in the room. But I'll show you the one at Stanford. I'm going to flip over to this version of it just so we get a little more screen real estate. So what we're looking at is what's called a community academic profile. It is faculty and student profiles at the Stanford School of Medicine. They have a little bit of data entry capability, but everything I'm going to show you is actually done with data feeds. They've normalized the data and brought it all together, including the PubMed data I'm going to show you later, which, as I understand, was no small feat. So just walk you through a little bit of this. Looking for a faculty member, Roger Kornberg, he's a Nobel laureate. And so we'll take a look at his profile. And what do we see about Roger? It'll scroll down, and we'll see information about his personal information, his who he's advising. We've got profiles and links to other students, or the students he's working with right now. Conflict of interest information, his industry relationships, that's out in public now, being fed from the conflict of interest database at Stanford. His research, that he's working on, and then publications. And take a look at this, we've got some tag clouds. And so we look at all the areas where Dr. Kornberg has published, including his primary area, RNA polymerase, and we can see who else is researching in that area, other publications, and his publications. This is all tagged up and automated, all automated feeds. So let's take a look at publications. So we can see other publications coming out of Stanford that are focusing on RNA polymerase, and we can see who else is working on them. There. So we've got starting to get the genealogy of research. Go back and take a look at the other side of the tag cloud. We look at profiles, people who are also doing similar research. Let's take a look at some of the other faculty who are following the same intellectual path as Dr. Kornberg. Dr. Brown. Again, his information, his overview, his professional pedigree shows up, his scientific focus, his publications, and we can start looking at people who look like him again. But take a look at what we've got going on above. We've also got his clinical trials being fed from the clinical trial database. And so we can see what work he's got underway. Now, behind the scenes, this is the public side of the Stanford presentation. I've seen the behind-the-scenes one that is available only at Stanford. It also includes the same kind of mashup of data for research so that you can see what grants are coming in, what people are working on, and it includes the same kind of presentation for students. And so why do we care? Why does this matter? Imagine that you're a student and you want to follow a career path like Dr. Kornberg, or that you want to get into his lab. How can you start tracing the genealogy? You know his name because he's a famous guy. But how do you know who else might be studying that, who might have research interests that are a little more closely aligned to yours? How do you do mentorship with students and advising with students because you can follow a genealogy of intellectual and scholarly work through a university? Within the university-only view, you can also see a lot about the students, not the, you know, the things that you shouldn't see, but you can see a lot about what they've studied and the research and publication they've done. And so if you want to, you're a student, and you want to follow a career path, can you go meet that person? Can you do social networking? Can you look at where they studied, what they chose to present about themselves that help you design your own scholarly career? These are really powerful mentoring tools, as well as the obvious benefit of being able to, for public presentation and reputation. A really exciting stuff going on there. So where are we going in the future? Just to wrap up then. What we've done with IT then is we've really followed this path of thinking more broadly, more creatively, and more interoperably about the systems and the service. And we flipped over when we're back here together in a few years. What we'll talk about is the fact that we have become strategists, we have become data managers rather than just technologists, and that we've really matured these models of working with each other beyond the boundaries, the houses that we've each built on our campus, that really start to solve the problems that the university has now.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. Visit morantechnology.com.